Welcome to What in God's Name? She's Shayna Appel.
And he's Chris Owen.
Good to see you, Shayna.
Nice to see you. Welcome back, Chris.
Thank you. I was in Arizona to learn about our southern border. And Shayna, I wanted to tell you, I stayed at an Airbnb that had an Alexa in the room. This is new technology for me.
So I said,
play What in God's Name podcast. Nothing happened.
It wasn't on?
You have to say, Alexa. So then I said, Alexa, play What in God's Name podcast. And do you know what happened?
Oh, tell me we came up.
I heard you and me talking.
Oh my God, that is so cool.
So if you have an Alexa or you're near an Alexa, just say, Alexa, play What in God's Name podcast, and you will hear us.
Oh man, that's amazing.
One of the things I realized when I was listening to What in God's Name podcast on Alexa in Arizona is that in our last show, you called me a dork.
I did.
I did
so lovingly.
And I know that, but I just wanted to let you know I haven't been called a dork since high school.
Well, then it's been far too long. I'll have to get right on that.
Get on your game.
I'll have to get on my game, yes.
You have tuned into our show, What in God's Name? We're doing philosophical and theological reflections on current events and culture. And we invite you to 25 minutes of serious thinking about what in God's name is going on in our world. And then after 25 minutes, we invite you to get a treat to reward yourself.
Marshmallows.
So as we bring more people on board to our show, Shayna, we welcome our new listeners, and we're glad that you can be with us. Today's show, we are going to take a look at selfishness. Sometimes in our show, we take a look at a particular current event that's going on in the world, and sometimes we take a look at broader themes in our culture. And today is a show really about a broader theme, selfishness.
Chris, I have been reading Jim Antle's book, Climate Church, Climate World. It's a great book. But as I was reading it, I came across a quote that was the inspiration for me for today's show. And it's a quote by James Gus Speth. And Gus says, I used to think that if we threw enough good science at the environmental problems, we could solve them. I was wrong. The main threats to the environment are not biodiversity loss, pollution, and climate change, as I once thought. They are selfishness and greed and pride. And for that, we need a spiritual and cultural transformation. As a people who seek to stay curious, go deep, and shine the light, that quote really jumped off the page at me. I came back to you and said, hey, let's do a show on selfishness and look at the multiple ways in which it's impacting our culture and our society. Certainly climate change being one of them.
For sure. So, Shayna, when you suggested this, my thought was, what new can we say? I mean, isn't it just easy to be against selfishness? So what new light can we shed on this?
Certainly the selfishness, which is conscious. We oppose it like an idea, but my sense is that we live in a culture that encourages it on so many subtle levels that it's easy to drift into it, you know, ass backwards.
That's very interesting. So to answer my own question about what possibly new we could say about selfishness, I read an article in the Atlantic Monthly by a woman named Megan Garber, and her article is about how public apology has disappeared. So you mentioned climate change in your opening quote as climate change as this instance of selfishness. And so I'm pointing to this article as another example, speaking of the subtle ways that selfishness can inform the public space.
And where has that lack of apology been more present than in the, you know, the Me Too movement, where, you know, you have all of these women who are standing up and naming abuse, and then you have all these abusers who are refusing to apologize and just, you know, and digging in and doubling down and all of that.
Exactly. And so we see in the media with famous people these depictions of no apology. I think it's alive out and around, and there's this lifting up of defiance, lifting up of doubling down as the way to engage the world. Let me draw a little more clearly the connection I see between this spirit
selfishness
of,
and a lack of
exactly,
apology.
Doubling down. So here I'm going to outline a process of what sometimes ends up as forgiveness and reconciliation, which would generally begin with some kind of offense. Somebody is injured. Somebody is offended that's involved.
Something got broken. Yeah.
And so the next step in a more healthy system would be contrition on the part of the offender. And then from contrition can come a repair, a bringing back together what had been broken has the potential to be repaired. So in this refusal of apology, this turning away from public apology, we have the same cycle, but instead of contrition, we get remorselessness. And so the one who has been injured, the party that's been injured, doesn't get the satisfaction of contrition from the offender. And that leads to anger and shame and cutoff. The possibility of reconciliation, the possibility of repair gets broken. And so there is a selfishness to that. But
though there has to be. I mean, there has to be. At the core, there has to be a selfishness in order to be able to stand with such disregard for, you know,
concern of the
other.
And that just leads to further than isolation between individuals or between groups of people. There are ramifications for a culture that has shunned public apology.
I would imagine that there is. And I mean, I think about all the followers of the current president who are watching someone do that, you know, in Technicolor. That's happening behind a really big pulpit and is really communicating in a lot of different ways that it's okay. You know, you do what you want. And then you say what it is, regardless of whether what you're saying fits the facts of what actually transpired or not.
Right. It becomes a model of a way of succeeding. It's a false model.
Oh, God. It's not.
Yeah. But it becomes a model. For people who are looking for some kind of model of success or meaning. But it's false.
It's like cheap grace. We have cheap success.
Cheap success. I think of our show as obviously going deeper and looking at these forces. They're spiritual forces at work. This may take us too far afield, but we'll give it a shot. Okay. You know, so I'm reflecting on this. In our show at this point, its growth is mostly among people who would probably self-describe as liberal. And yet, I want to reach people who would self-describe as conservative, because this kind of thing that we're talking about now is the kind of virtue that a conservative would embrace.
Yes, I agree. And I had an opportunity to experience that firsthand last week. I was up at a Pete Buttigieg rally in Concord, standing in the line, turned around, and behind me was a young adult with a MAGA cap on and his, you know, Trump for president t-shirt. And, you know, we don't just preach staying curious, going deep and shining the light. We actually try to live that in the world. So I turned around and started a conversation with him. His name was Nick, and he's this great guy. He was part of a class that came down from Saratoga Springs. And just to give our listeners an example of how delightfully surprising an interaction like that can be, one of the reporters was interviewing Nick. We attracted a lot of media attention, Nick and I, standing there talking to one another and laughing and, you know, looking like we were getting along, which I guess in today's culture is rather shocking. The television reporter asked Nick if there was any way that Pete Buttigieg could win his support. And Nick said, you know, very nicely, probably not. I mean, I'm working on, you know, the Trump campaign, but he could earn my respect. And I thought, I know a lot of people who would be surprised that such decency, you know, came out of a Trump supporter. And I mean, honestly, I had the impression standing there, I'm 5'2", not small. I'm not a small person. But I'm short. And Nick is not short, and he's a big guy. And I mean, if anybody had ever come at me in that line, Like Nick would have squashed him like a bug. You know, that's how together we had gotten in this short period of time.
There are a few things I want to say about that. Okay. One is, sometimes on this show we talk about, or at least I do, the space that is pre-political, that's public but pre-political. And I think you've identified what that looks like, because your interaction with him, that connection, to my mind, is pre-political. You were at a political rally, but that wasn't the character that wasn't the character of your interaction. And so, you know, as I think about our show and what we're asking of people and asking of ourselves, and also lifting up as really important, is these pre-political spaces that are public. And so to blur the line of what popularly is known as liberal, conservative, Trumpist, I feel like there's a new coalition that can be formed of people who are really standing on the side of virtue.
Yeah.
There's argument to be had with under that broad category, what counts as virtue. So, but leaving that aside.
And there's going to be arguments about the details, but the question is, can we engage in civil discourse? And that necessarily requires a lack of selfishness and the ability to be apologetic when you're wrong, to acknowledge when you're wrong. I want to go back to selfishness for
a
minute,
because
you were speaking earlier before we came on about something you had read from an 18th century clergy person. I'm wondering if you could share that with our listeners.
Joseph Butler was a early 18th century English clergyman in obviously the church, well, maybe not obviously, but in the Church of England. And this is from one of his sermons. It's got masculine pronouns, apologies, and it's early 18th century English, so we'll have to translate a bit. Here's what he says. It is commonly observed that there is a disposition in men to complain of the viciousness and corruption of the age in which they live, as greater than the former ones.
Right. This was early 1700s. Okay.
Yeah. So basically his observation
is that we've been bitching and moaning for literally millennia. Okay, right. Centuries,
excuse me. Which is usually followed with this further observation that mankind has been, in that respect, much the same in all times. Yeah. Now, not to determine whether this last be not contradicted by the accounts of history, thus much can scarce be doubted, that vice and folly take different turns, and some particular kinds of it are more open and avowed in some ages than in others. And I suppose it may be spoken of as very much the distinction of the present to profess a contracted spirit, and greater regard to self-interest than appears to have been done formerly. So basically, Joseph Butler is saying the animating spirit of the early 18th century in England is the spirit of selfishness.
Yeah, and when you said that, I loved and was terrified by the notion of an animating spirit, because I kind of like realized in a flash that there is always an animating spirit that will work within us. So the question is, are we going to choose the spirit that runs through us? And if we choose a spirit to run through us, how hard will we have to work at nurturing that spirit in order to keep it alive in a culture that is sometimes very antithetical to it? So, you know, getting back to the original thesis that apparently was as true in the 1700s as it is today, which is that we live in a culture where selfishness and greed are running roughshod over the more virtuous human spiritual potential candidates.
And I have to say, I think that's always the case. Thomas Hobbes said, human life in the state of nature is solitary, poor, nasty, brutish, and short. And I'm with him.
Uh-huh. That's because you're a nothing buttery person.
I am not a nothing buttery person.
I once was another nothing buttery person.
Now, this is not nothing buttery. This is a view of human nature.
Okay. It's pretty dark. Can you say that again?
Life in the state of nature, so human nature, is solitary, poor, nasty, brutish, and short. And what that gives rise to in me is that civilization, civil society, is an achievement. It doesn't come about by itself.
Right, yeah.
That we have to cultivate these virtues. We have to be practicing curiosity, depth, and light, or else we will descend.
It's so brilliant. It takes me back to the show that we did around the Emerson piece. You know, we were talking about how a democracy cannot exist without a love for one's fellow citizens. That, you know, the citizenry, the notion that, it, you know, we are connected each to each and each to all, that, you know, sense of we go forward together or we go nowhere at all, is so critical for the health of a democracy, for the existence of a democracy.
Yes, that's it. It's the same deal. So my role on this show is to be the angel of darkness.
Yes.
I bring that Hobbesian view and...
And I bring Arlo.
Thank God you bring Arlo. But I bring that because, well, I bring it because that's what I believe. And also that view of human nature is a foundation of philosophical conservatism. Historical philosophical conservatism has that darker view of human nature, which is why a lot of what is called conservatism today
is
not really conservatism. But that's a show for a different day.
Funny, it manifests it pretty darn well, but it doesn't think of itself in that
light. Isn't that funny, though? Because, well, I'm sorry.
Another show.
Yeah, it's another show. What are the takeaways today, Shana? What do you have a takeaway for today?
I really, Chris, I have to just go back to that notion of an animating spirit of selfishness, because the thing about an animating spirit, again, is if, you know, we can choose it, or, you know, we can be like lambs to slaughter and just get directed into something and we're not even conscious of the subtle ways that we're being driven there. The example I used, you know, again, before we came on the air was watching all these people during the season of Christmas run like lambs to slaughter to spend more money than they can afford on crap that nobody needs, which eventually will end up in landfills, which we cannot afford at this particular point in time. But, you know, this sort of unconscious, you know, how unconscious do you have to be to throw an empty beer can out your car window? I don't know what it looks like in the rest of the country. I can tell you here in New Hampshire, it's a nightmare. I mean, I just see beer cans and the high energy drinks all over the side of the road. And I think to myself, my God, our planet is dying. How unconscious and selfish do you need to be behaving in this way? So it's an animating spirit. It's here like a plague. And man, we better wake up and get about the business of beating it back into a box.
My takeaway is the Joseph Butler quotation and recognizing he saw selfishness as the animating spirit of his time, early 18th century England. Plus ça change, plus ça même.
Yeah, right. The more things change, the more they remain the same. Touché.
I hope I got the French right, because
I think
my accent was pretty good. I think, yeah, but I'm not sure I had the words right. But anyway, to me, that might lend a little different angle on selfishness, to have a longer view, that there are questions of human nature involved in this, which I got to with the Thomas Hobbes as well. You know, so it really calls us to reflect on what is the human being and how then do we respond as individuals to the spirit of the times and as communities. I think that's also just so crucial.
Yeah,
where are we forming the communities that then can be places to practice escaping selfishness? And I do mean escape. Like, we want to get out of there because that's a life that is really poor and impoverished.
Yeah, I think maybe one place where I differ from the philosophers of history is that I don't know that I believe that selfishness is an innate characteristic of humanity. It may be an innate characteristic of civilization. So it arises out of the complexity once people start interacting together. And frankly, I like my take on it better, because if in fact it's not innate in us, but something that we are predisposed perhaps to drift into once we start interacting with other human beings, then we also have agency. We also have the power and the ability to snuff it out. And so that's more hopeful, but that's my job on the show, is not to be the angel of darkness, but rather to bring the light.
Let's leave it there, Shana. Be curious.
Go deep.
And shine light indeed. You have been with us for the last 25 minutes of serious thinking about serious things, so go have a marshmallow.
Go get your marshmallows, people.
You can find out more about What in God's Name at our website, whatingods.com. That's WHATINGODS. And when you get to our landing page, there's a tab that says How to Listen. So you can click on that and subscribe to our show through any of the avenues that you get your podcasts. Also, you can find us on Facebook at What in God's. Shana, I think I'm doing pretty well on my New Year's resolution for January to be posting more on Facebook.
We are getting some traffic on the Facebook page, Chris. It's sort of fun. So folks, keep it coming.
It's a lovely thing. See you next time.
Next time, Chris. Have a blessed day.